Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. Get up to 35% off select major appliances and save an additional $1,000 when you buy four select LG major appliances. Plus, get a free DeWalt 20-volt max 5-amp-hour battery when you buy a select DeWalt 20-volt max tool. Get the job done for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/26. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See associate or Lowe's.com for more details and qualifying items.
Story 1. Trouble has a way of hiding in plain sight, like dust in sunlight. You don't notice it until it hits at the right angle. That's how I've always thought about the calls I've taken over the years. Most end up routine, boring even. But every so often, you run into something that shifts the ground under your feet. There was one search I'll never forget, and it still creeps me out when I think about it. This wasn't a raid or some high-stakes warrant. It was a welfare check that escalated into a full-house search. A neighbor had called about a property on the edge of town, saying they hadn't seen the owner in weeks, and that strange noises had been coming from inside at night. By strange, they didn't mean loud music or parties. They meant screaming. Not the kind you'd brush off as TV blaring too late. More like someone being hurt. That got our attention. The house itself sat on a road that already had a bad reputation. Locals called it cursed. Years back, a woman had supposedly been murdered there after being lured by a hitchhiker. Some said she'd been buried near the creek that ran behind the place. And ever since then, people swore they saw lights moving through the trees or heard crying on the bridge that cut across the water. I never put much stock in those stories. Every town has its ghost road. But when I pulled up to that property, I felt a chill I couldn't shake. The front yard was overgrown, the kind of wild grass that hides broken bottles and rusted tools. The windows were dark, but the curtains looked like they'd been moved recently. My flashlight beam cut through dust swirling in the air as we pushed the door open. The smell hit immediately, musty, stale, mixed with something metallic. Not quite blood, not quite mold. Somewhere in between. The living room was cluttered with old furniture and stacks of newspapers that looked like they hadn't been touched in years. Dust covered everything except for a path leading from the door deeper into the house. It looked like someone had been pacing that exact line, back and forth, for a long time. On the wall above the couch were deep scratches. At first, I thought maybe it was from a dog, but the marks were too high up, too deliberate. We moved room by room. The kitchen was worse. Dirty dishes piled up, food rotting in pans, but the fridge was empty, unplugged, and lined with salt. I stopped and stared at that for a while. People don't just line their refrigerators with salt unless they're trying to keep something out, or maybe lock something in. The real nightmare was the basement. The air grew colder as soon as we found the door. My partner muttered something about the draft, but it felt heavier than that, like stepping into a different atmosphere. We went down cautiously, flashlights cutting into the dark. The concrete walls were covered in chalk drawings, circles, crosses, and symbols I didn't recognize. Some looked like they'd been drawn by a child, others like they'd been etched in by someone obsessively. In the middle of the floor was a crude wooden chair, rotting and cracked, with what looked like dried rope still tied to the legs. As we were checking the space, we heard footsteps above us, clear as day. Someone was running across the floorboards upstairs. We called out, thinking maybe the missing homeowner had come back, but there was no answer. The noise stopped as suddenly as it started. When we went back up, every room was exactly how we'd left it. No new footprints, no open doors. I wanted to chalk it up to echoes or the house settling, but the more we looked around, the less sense anything made. In one of the upstairs bedrooms, all the furniture had been pushed against the walls, leaving the center of the room empty except for a single mirror propped on the floor. The mirror wasn't dusty like everything else. It looked freshly cleaned. And when I glanced into it, I swear I saw movement behind me, even though my partner was in front of me and there was nothing else in the room. We finished our search, documented everything, and left the house sealed. Officially, the report went down as unoccupied residence, signs of neglect, no person located. Unofficially, I couldn't stop thinking about that basement, about the running footsteps, about the mirror. That night, while finishing paperwork in my cruiser, I parked not too far from that cursed road. As I sat there, I noticed a heavy fog starting to roll in. It wasn't drifting in naturally like fog should. It stopped right at the mouth of the road, hanging there like a solid wall. The rest of the street was clear, but that fog just sat there, thick and unmoving, like it was guarding something. I thought about the story of the woman who never made it off that road, about the scratches in the living room wall, about the chair in the basement. My gut told me I was standing too close to something I shouldn't be near. I drove off without looking back, and I've never gone down that road again. Logic tells me there are explanations for all of it. The salt in the fridge could have been a weird attempt at pest control. The footsteps could have been sound traveling from outside, and the fog could have been nothing but weather. But sometimes when I think about that mirror, I remember the way the reflection moved differently than I did, and I wonder if logic even applies to that place at all. Story 2. Like a clock with a missing tooth, the building kept catching on the same beat and then jerking, and nobody could make it run right again. That's the first thing that stuck with me the night I got called to that block of flats. An old poorhouse from the 1800s that had been chopped up into tiny flats and packed with people who'd learned to live with oddness until it became normal. I wasn't a beat cop then, just doing night paperwork and handling calls when the regulars were busy. So when the control room flagged repeated fire alarms coming from that address, I rolled my eyes and went. Alarm calls are the kind that either end with you laughing at a burnt toast or standing in a smoky doorway with adrenaline in your throat. This one ended up lodged in my head for years. The street smelled like wet concrete and takeaway when I pulled up. A crowd of residents were clustered outside in their slippers, breath hanging white in the chill. They told us the alarms went off 3 or 4 times a night, always at odd hours and most often around certain times of the year. Late autumn, when the wind came in from the fields, and she would start crying. They said people heard a woman crying that sounded like it came from the stairwell, and that nobody wanted to go in because they thought the woman might be the one setting the alarms, maybe someone unwell or violent. The building had that way of making people avoid each other's floors. Everyone knew everyone's business from the doorstep, but no one wanted to push past anyone's threshold. I shrugged it off with the usual rational explanations, faulty wiring, kids playing. But even as I said it, I could taste the sour worry on the air. We went up the stairwell in pairs, torches cutting through dust motes. The stairwell was old wood and iron, echoey and narrow, like a throat that swallowed sound and spat it back small. Halfway up, the crying started, soft at first like someone sobbing into their hands, then louder as we climbed. It was female, thin and ragged, not like any TV scream. It had this loop in it that made your skin tighten. The sound impossibly moved with us. We turned a landing, and it seemed to be below us. Then as we climbed, it grew louder still and felt like it was above us or inside the walls. Every cop in the team tried to find the source logically. Voices drifting from open windows, pipes carrying sound, maybe a radio underneath someone's pillow. But none of that matched the way the crying behaved. It didn't travel like ordinary sound. It folded around corners and slid up stair treads. On the second landing, we stopped and scanned the doors. One of the tenants said the alarms always tripped at specific flats on the third floor, while others swore it was random. One old woman told us, without looking up, that the crying always started right before the alarms and then stopped as soon as the wail of the siren died off. That made the hairs on my neck lift more than the sound itself. We knocked doors, called names, listened. No answer. Doors were locked, curtains still. A radiator clanked now and then, making the building sigh as if it were tired of holding its secrets. We kept climbing until the crying seemed to be right there with us, and then the impossible part happened. When we turned the landing, the sound seemed to be coming from the top step of the previous flight, like it belonged to a moment that had already passed. My partner nudged the last stair and told me the wood was solid, nothing hollow, no small children hiding. The concrete stair nosing was clean of fresh footprints. We swept the torches across the banister and the spindles, saw only the usual scuffs of years of shoes. The crying didn't stop, though. It looped and spiraled, getting louder in patches, then soft again as if listening for us to react. That was the moment I felt something practical slip away. Explanations started to feel thin. We called the landlord and an electrician and documented everything for the log. The electrics had the usual mess: old fuse boxes, dodgy wiring in one flat, and backs of meters open. The electrician clicked his tongue and promised to sort the faulty circuits out. It was the right answer for paperwork and health and safety, but it didn't explain the way the crying froze when somebody opened a particular door and then woke up again as soon as they left. It didn't account for the way the alarms always came in seasonal patterns, like a calendar tick that belonged to someone else. What made it worse was the little, ordinary details that kept turning uncanny. In the hallway outside one flat, wet footprints were leading from the door to the window that looked like they had been made in the last hour. But the flat had been...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Empty for a month. In another place, a child's drawing of a house had a circled step on it like a target. One tenant swore she'd seen a silhouette on the landing at 3 a.m. that had stood as if listening. The landlord kept saying the house had been a poorhouse once, back when women were sent away and babies given up, and people started mentioning names and old records everyone had heard whispered down the years. The history read like a catalog of small tragedies, an epidemic, a house fire, a mother buried in a nearby field. Little signs stacked up like dry tinder. I wasn't afraid as much as I was careful. A week after that initial check, I signed my mortgage for a flat on the ground floor in the same block. Call it stupidity or plain convenience, it was cheap and close to work. I told myself I had to be objective, to not let a few cries and foggy footsteps sway my judgment. On moving day, adrenaline and the rush of boxes made every scrape and creak feel normal. But that first night, every sound was amplified. I came in through the front doors and scurried past the staircase like a kid trying to get to his room before bedtime. Every time I passed the landing, I felt that same thin pressure on the back of my neck, like the building was watching me measure out my steps. I started grabbing the keys and practically bolting into my own flat, shutting the door in a rush as if closing out a draft that smelled faintly of old soap and salt. Over the months, the crying kept happening in its ritual pattern. Weeks where nothing happened, and then a burst of alarms and that thin voice looping in the stairwell. After a while, I stopped arguing with my gut. I started double-checking the locks, leaving a light on in the hallway, and walking past the stairs quickly when I had to go out at night. Sometimes the crying would swell up into a sob so human it made me want to find the woman, to ask what she needed. But the moment I considered that and took a step toward the landing, the sound would recede like a tide pulling away. It was as if something wanted to be heard, but only on its own terms, never to be approached. People reading this will have their own shorthand for what happened: faulty wiring, mental health issues, collective suggestion. Those are sensible ideas, but there's a weight to a place that gathers over time, a pattern of small, terrible things that makes ordinary explanations feel inadequate. I worked houses for years and saw horrors that had earthly causes, but that stairwell had a rhythm that didn't belong to wiring or weather. It kept catching on the same missing tooth over and over, and I learned to move through it fast, like someone avoiding a snagged clock. I still avoid that stairwell when I can. When I do have to go past it, I don't look up. I don't listen too hard. Some things, I learned, demand only one kind of response: respect and retreat. Story 3. It felt like walking into the mouth of a place that wasn't supposed to breathe. That's the best way I can explain what happened that night. I was still new, working the graveyard shift as security at a hotel casino. The kind of place that looks alive at any hour because lights and machines never stop humming. You'd think a place like that wouldn't leave room for silence. But the top floor of the hotel taught me otherwise. We'd gotten noise complaints from guests on the floor below. Dispatch told us over the radio that nobody was registered on that top floor, which made it even stranger. My trainer, who'd been doing this a while, gave me the kind of look that said, "Welcome to night shift, kid." He told me it was probably just drunks messing around. That's what I wanted to believe. We took the elevator up, the kind that creaks a little on the highest stops. The moment we stepped out, I knew something was off. The air was heavy, muffled, like the hallways had been wrapped in cotton. Every door on the entire floor stood wide open. Not cracked, not ajar. Completely wide, like they'd all swung out in unison. If you've ever stayed in a hotel like this, you know the doors are designed to slam shut automatically. No way they'd all just stay open on their own. We walked down the hallway slowly, checking for any sign that housekeeping or maintenance had been through. But nothing was propped open. No carts, no tools, no do not disturb tags. Just the empty yawns of rooms with dark insides. The carpet muted our steps, but I swear the sound of the air vent felt louder than us. I asked dispatch if maybe engineering had been working up here during the day, leaving everything open. A few minutes later, they came back saying engineering confirmed no one had touched the floor. No work orders, nothing. My trainer swore under his breath and started pacing. He said the only way this could happen is if someone manually went through and opened every single door, one by one. But then the question became, who and why? We debated checking the rooms, but even my trainer hesitated. He kept glancing at the dark interiors like something might be crouched just beyond the doorframe. I suggested we at least sweep one or two, just to say we'd done it. He shook his head and told dispatch over the radio that we'd checked the floor and found it empty. His voice was steady, but I noticed the sweat on his palms when he lowered the mic. We walked back toward the elevator, trying not to look at the open rooms anymore. It felt like the longer we lingered, the more the silence pressed in. Almost like the building was waiting for us to make a wrong move. The elevator doors finally slid open and we stepped inside fast, not saying a word until we hit the ground floor again. Afterward, my trainer told me flat out that some things you don't dig too deep into. He said that floor had always had issues, though nobody ever wrote them down in the log. Guests would sometimes call about footsteps overhead when the floor was vacant, or complain about hearing voices through the ceiling. Housekeeping hated it and only cleaned it in pairs. I asked if he believed it was haunted. He just shrugged and said, "I believe in leaving well enough alone." I'll be honest, I can't prove anything about that night. Maybe someone with a master key opened every door for a prank. Maybe there's some technical glitch nobody wanted to admit to. But in that moment, standing on a silent floor with doors yawning open into dark rooms, it felt like the building itself had woken up and was staring back at us. I never volunteered to go up there again. Story 4. The city at night is like a pocket watch left open on a kitchen table. Everything that keeps it running is exposed if you look close enough. That's how the rooftop felt the night I almost walked into whatever made those prints. I work as an unarmed security in a residential high-rise. The kind of building where people pay way too much for a view and expect the staff to jump when they say jump. My post isn't glamorous, but it's steady. The only real hot spot is the rooftop pool, which management is obsessive about keeping closed after hours. So on a cold night a while back, I was tucked away in the rooftop stairwell to stay out of the wind, counting down the last hour of my shift. That's when I heard it. At first it was laughter, not the kind that comes from a group hanging out, but this weird, unsteady fit of laughter that kept building and building until it sounded like the person couldn't breathe. I figured maybe it was someone screwing around inside their apartment, the sound bouncing weirdly. But then it broke into shrieking, sharp, broken screams that didn't stay in one spot. It moved, shifting places like someone was running. I stepped out of the stairwell, expecting to see a drunk tenant on a balcony or maybe some partiers who'd snuck past me to the pool. But the sound was coming from the rooftop itself. That's the part that didn't make sense. The roof is locked tight, and the only way up without a key is to climb a pretty high concrete wall. Not impossible, but not something you'd expect on a freezing night. The noise cut off the second I stepped fully onto the roof deck. Silence except for the hum of the city below. I tried to pinpoint where the sounds had come from, but the rooftop is dark, slick, and wide open. There's no place to hide up there. That's when I saw them. Footprints. Fresh ones. Barefoot. At first I thought I was seeing water prints, but when I crouched down, I realized they weren't damp marks at all. They were darker than the roof itself, like someone had walked through dirt or ash before dancing across the surface. Even stranger, there were no heel prints. Every single step was on the balls of the feet, like whoever it was had been running around on tiptoes. The tracks trailed off into the darkness, leading toward the far side of the roof where there's no railing, just open air and a long drop. The thing that twisted my stomach was that I'd walked past that same stretch less than an hour earlier when I did my rounds. It had been spotless then. No footprints, nothing unusual. And now suddenly, these fresh ones had appeared in a place no one should have been able to access. I stood there frozen, every part of me trying to reason it out. Maybe someone had climbed up from the outside somehow. Maybe a tenant had left through a fire escape I didn't know about. Maybe it was just some lunatic messing with me. But the longer I looked, the less sense it made. The prints didn't line up right. The spacing was off, like the person had moved too quickly, too lightly, like they were darting across the roof rather than walking. I didn't stick around to investigate further. I backed away, went straight down the stairwell, and planted myself in the lobby until my shift ended. The whole time I kept thinking, if it was just some drugged-out trespasser, I should have seen them leave. There was only one stairwell and no noise of anyone climbing down. And if it wasn't a trespasser, well, the alternative didn't sit well either. I never told management the details, just wrote it off as unusual noise in the report. They don't pay me enough to explain barefoot tiptoe tracks on a locked roof. Between a ghost and a meth head, I honestly don't know which I'd rather believe. One means I saw something I can't explain. The other means some guy was up there barefoot in the freezing cold, shrieking and laughing while I was just a few feet away. Either way, I want no part of it. Story 5. Sometimes being a cop feels less like law enforcement and more like patching holes in a sinking boat. The radio never stays quiet for long, and most calls aren't about crime. They're about people who don't know who else to call. That's how I got pulled into one of the strangest cases I've ever handled, one that still sticks with me years later. In my city, the projects are always busy. You've got everything from families just trying to get by to addicts and people battling mental health issues. Late night calls out there are normal, but there was one woman who stood out. She was an elderly Haitian lady who phoned 911 every few months, always convinced that spirits had invaded her home. The first time I went, I assumed it would be like a lot of other mental health checks. Calm the person down, make sure they're safe, and maybe connect them to services. But this woman didn't act like someone lost in confusion. She was sharp, polite, and articulate. Her only insistence was that ghosts, or sometimes what she called voodoo spirits, were tormenting her. That first night, I remember how nervous she looked standing in her own apartment. The place was clean but cluttered, with little trinkets and religious figures lining her shelves. She pointed to her bedroom and told me the voices came from inside. My partner raised his eyebrows, giving me the silent look that said, "Just humor her." So I stepped in, shut the door, and waited. For 5 minutes, I stood alone in her quiet room, trying not to feel silly. The apartment was still, but I swear the air felt heavier the longer I stood there, like someone had turned down the oxygen just a notch. When I came back out, I told her I had spoken with the spirits and convinced them to leave. I added that they wouldn't return unless she permitted them. I expected her to smile politely and play along. Instead, she lit up with relief, almost like a physical weight had lifted off her shoulders. She stepped back into the bedroom cautiously, then looked around like she was testing the air. She nodded and said they were gone. She thanked me over and over, like I had done something real. I brushed it off, told myself she just needed someone to validate her feelings. But every 3 or 4 months, the same woman would call again. Each time it was the same routine. The ghosts or spirits were back, and she needed help. By then I had a trick. I carried an empty water bottle with the label peeled off. When she showed me the corner or room where the spirits were strongest, I'd sprinkle the water and call it holy. She always believed it worked, always thanked me, and always offered me food afterward. I never accepted, but I could tell she appreciated the gesture of kindness on both sides. It would have stayed just a quirky, harmless call if not for the little things that started to pile up. One night while I was alone in her bedroom doing the routine, I swear I heard something faint, like a whisper, but too quiet to make out. I chalked it up to the building creaking. Another time when I sprinkled the holy water in her living room, the overhead light flickered out for a second before buzzing back to life. She gasped and said that meant the spirits were angry, but I laughed it off as bad wiring. Still, the timing was unnerving. The creepiest moment came about a year into these calls. I was in her kitchen, pretending to cleanse the space, when I heard a sudden scraping sound from the bedroom. It was sharp, like heavy furniture being dragged across the floor. My first thought was an intruder, so I rushed in. Nothing had moved. Everything was exactly where it had been before. The woman stayed by the doorframe, shaking her head, saying the spirits didn't like me interfering. My partner wasn't there that time, and I'll admit, being alone in that apartment unsettled me more than I expected. She never once accepted medical referrals. Every time we tried, she declined politely, saying she didn't need a doctor. She wasn't confused or ranting. She knew what she was asking for and believed the ritual worked. And honestly, after a while, I stopped trying to convince myself it was just make-believe. Whether or not the spirits were real, something in that apartment made the air feel different. Even off duty, I found myself thinking about her. Why did the calls always happen at night? Why did she never ask for help from family or friends? Only the police? And why did I, a cop who prided himself on being practical, feel uneasy every time I stepped into her apartment? Logic says it's just the power of suggestion. Walk into a place expecting it to be haunted, and your mind will fill in the blanks. But a small part of me wonders if she wasn't seeing something I couldn't. The last time I saw her, she was smiling when I left, clutching her hands together like she truly believed I'd driven the spirits out again. That image stays with me. Maybe it was all in her head. Maybe the whispers, the flickering lights, and the dragging sound were coincidences. Or maybe in some strange way, she was right all along. Story 6. Some nights on the job feel like entering someone else's dream. You can never be sure if it's reality or just someone's imagination. One such night, I received a call from an elderly woman claiming her apartment was haunted. I work in a big city, in a sector that's mostly housing projects. It's not unusual to get calls that involve mental health struggles or people who simply need someone to listen. This particular woman stood out right away, though. She was elderly, Haitian, spoke with perfect clarity, and carried herself like someone who'd been through a lot in life. But she would call late at night, claiming she could hear voices and spirits moving around in her apartment. The first time I responded with my partner, I half expected to walk into a messy situation, someone yelling at empty walls, or a home so unkempt it looked like something from a horror movie. But that wasn't the case. Her apartment was small but neat, with family photos on the walls and the faint smell of food still lingering. She greeted us politely, then explained that she could hear ghosts whispering in her bedroom. She insisted they were voodoo spirits, watching her, trying to get in. My partner looked at me with that expression we both used 100 times, the one that says, "Do we play along or do we try reason?" I decided to keep things simple. I told her I'd go into the bedroom and speak to the spirits. I closed the door and stood in the dark room for about 5 minutes. Nothing happened. No movement, no whispers, nothing but the faint hum of the city outside. When I opened the door, she hesitated, asking if it was safe. I told her I had asked them to leave and that they couldn't return unless she gave them permission. What happened next still makes me pause when I think about it. She looked visibly relieved, like I just lifted a weight from her chest. She walked into the bedroom slowly, glanced around, and then smiled. She said she couldn't see them anymore. She thanked us, and for the first time that night, she seemed at peace. Since then, she's called again every few months. Always the same story. Ghosts in her home, spirits watching her, voices whispering in the night. Each time, I go in with a water bottle that I've stripped the label from. I ask her to show me where the spirits are strongest. Sometimes she points to a corner, other times to the space near her bed. I sprinkle the holy water there, telling her it will drive them out. Every single time she thanks me, says she feels safer, and offers food in return. I always decline politely. Now here's the part that unsettles me, even though I try not to think too hard on it. The first couple times I was sure it was just her imagination, or maybe a coping mechanism she had built around her own fears. But there were a few times that stuck with me. One night, as I sprinkled the water in her living room, I swear I heard something faint, like a whisper, though the TV was off and the apartment was dead quiet. Another time, the lights flickered for just a second while I was in her bedroom, enough to make my stomach drop. She looked at me then and nodded, like she knew exactly what I just felt. I still tell myself it's all explainable. Old wiring, tired ears playing tricks, the power of suggestion. But I can't deny the fact that every time I leave her place, I feel like I've walked out of a different world and back into mine. She never comes across as crazy. She's too articulate, too aware, and she never accepts medical help when it's offered. She insists she's fine, and maybe she is. It's been years now, and she still calls every once in a while. At this point, I almost expect it, like part of the rhythm of my work. I still bring the unmarked water bottle. I still go room to room, letting her point out where the ghosts hide, and she still believes me when I tell her they're gone. Maybe she just needs the ritual to feel safe. Maybe I'm just humoring her and nothing more. But late at night, when I think about it, I can't shake the thought that maybe she's seeing something I can't. And maybe the reason I keep going back without complaint isn't just because it's my job. It's because some small part of me wonders if I'm the one being protected when I step into that apartment with her. Story 7. Some nights on the job feel like routine, just clock watching until the shift ends. Other nights are like walking into a script you didn't know you were a part of. This one still sticks with me after all these years, and I don't know if I'll ever fully explain it. I was working the desk, covering the 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. shift. Back then, the department still handled alarm monitoring for a handful of houses, an old system that should have been retired years earlier but was left running because tearing it out would have been a nightmare. Around dinner time, one of the fire alarms from that system went off. Dispatch was already there to take the call, so I grabbed my coat, ready to head over to the fire department just in case. Right as I was stepping out, the 911 line lit up. The address matched the same house where the alarm had triggered. I picked up, expecting a frantic caller, maybe someone choking on smoke. Instead, it was nothing, just dead air. Not even a pocket dial kind of static. Pure silence. My gut told me whoever it was might have collapsed mid-call, so I bolted out the back door, jumped into the squad car, and radioed both fire and police on the joint channel to let them know I was going straight there. I pulled up just as another unit arrived. The house was quiet, no smoke, no lights flashing, no signs of anyone in distress. For a moment, it looked like a false alarm. Then while we were scanning the property, we saw two women coming up the street. An older woman was pushing an even older lady in a wheelchair. They lived there. They explained they'd just been out for an evening stroll and had no idea why the alarms would go off. That's when things got odd. The daughter said the alarm system had been disconnected from the house years ago during renovations. They didn't even have a monitoring system anymore. Just a couple of standard smoke detectors. Still, protocol was protocol, so we did a walk around. That's when we noticed the smell. Gas, strong and unmistakable, wafting from the back door near the kitchen. We moved quickly, shutting off the gas at the main and setting up fans to clear the air. Eventually, we tracked it to a cracked line running to the oven. The daughter explained she'd spilled coffee earlier while making some for their walk. She had to pull the oven out to clean the mess and must have cracked the line pushing it back in. A simple accident, but a dangerous one. Here's what unsettled me, though. The phone call. Both of their phones were on the hook. Neither woman had called 911. The daughter swore up and down she didn't even pick it up. Yet the line we got came directly from their address. If it wasn't her, who dialed? 15 minutes into the call, the fire chief showed up. He walked straight to the two women, gave them both a hug, and I saw him holding back tears. That's when the story took another turn. The elderly lady in the chair, her husband had been the fire chief of our department over 60 years ago. The daughter's husband had also been in the department before he passed. Both men had dedicated huge parts of their lives to keeping people safe. The chief said later that maybe it was nothing more than luck or coincidence, but I could see it in his face. He believed something else was at play. The alarm that wasn't connected, the silent 911 call. Both led us there just in time before the gas filled the house to a dangerous level. Nobody wanted to say the word ghost, but everyone was thinking it. I've tried for years to reason it out. Maybe there was still some weird wire in the system tied to their old alarm that triggered after all this time. Maybe the gas leak caused some kind of electrical short that pinged our system and even made the phone line glitch. That's the logical side. But the other part of me, the part that remembers the hug from the fire chief, the look in his eyes, wonders if it was something else. I don't go around telling ghost stories, and I never thought of myself as a believer. But that night planted a seed. Maybe people who dedicate their lives to protecting others don't stop just because they're gone. Maybe they still find ways to look out for the ones they love. I'll never know for sure. But when I think back on it, I can't help but feel we weren't the only ones working that call. Story 8. Some buildings feel like they're alive, breathing through the walls, waiting for the right moment to let you know you're not alone. That's the kind of place I was working in when I pulled night shifts as a security guard. It was a decent gig on paper, a two-story office building with around 50 to 80 people filling cubicles during the day, and then just me from 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. At night, the whole place was mine. My desk was at the front door, right by the main switchboard, and every couple of hours I'd do a full patrol, checking both floors, making sure everything was secure. You'd think it would be boring, but I started realizing early on that this building didn't settle quietly after dark. Almost from the beginning, I'd hear things. Thuds from empty hallways, faint footsteps above me, or the sound of someone shifting in one of the cubicles when no one should be there. The first few nights, I'd stop what I was doing and go investigate. I never found anything, of course. By the third week, I noticed it was almost always around 3:15 in the morning, like clockwork. At first, it unnerved me, but eventually I got used to it. I chalked it up to the building creaking, the HVAC system, or my own mind playing tricks in the dead quiet. The strangest thing happened during one of my patrols, and it still makes me second guess what I saw. It was my third round of the night, sometime around 3:30 a.m., and I was on the second floor. Everything looked normal until I noticed that several ceiling tiles were missing. Not just one or two, whole sections were gone. Even weirder, two of the roof hatches were wide open. I knew for a fact they hadn't been like that earlier when I'd done my first rounds. There was no way I would have missed it. I felt a wave of unease, like someone had been moving around up there while I was downstairs. But when I looked closer, there was no dust disturbed, no sign of anyone actually climbing in or out. When the day staff came in later, I mentioned it, figuring maybe maintenance had been working overnight and forgot to close things up. But they looked genuinely confused and said no one should have been up there at all. That was when I felt the first real chill, because that meant whatever happened took place in the middle of my shift, and I'd been the only person in the building. I ended up talking to another guard who had worked there for years before me. He was older, the kind of guy who didn't like to talk much. When I asked him about the strange noises and things like the hatches, he just gave me this weary look. He admitted that he had experienced plenty of weird things in that building too, but he never wanted to go into detail. He was religious, and from the way he avoided the topic, it felt like he didn't want to invite more of whatever was there by speaking about it. That conversation stuck with me. The activity didn't stop there. Every now and then, I'd find little things that didn't make sense. Computer monitors would flicker on as I walked by, like someone had just touched the mouse, even though the workstations were supposed to be locked and idle. The coffee machine in the break room would suddenly start humming, the way it does when it's brewing, even though nobody had used it since the afternoon shift. Radios in random cubicles would power on, voices whispering static before cutting out. Sometimes I'd walk through and swear a desk setup looked different than it had a couple of hours earlier. Papers that had been stacked neatly would be scattered. A chair would be pulled out where I remembered it tucked in. I started doubting myself, wondering if I just hadn't paid enough attention. But after a while, I couldn't shake the sense that something, or someone, was messing with me. The more time I spent in that building, the heavier the nights felt. It was still an easy paycheck, but I never shook the feeling that the place was watching me. The ceiling hatches, the electronics turning on by themselves, the strange noises at the same hour every night. It all added up to something I couldn't explain. I never saw anything outright. No shadowy figure standing in the hallway, no face staring back at me in the glass doors. But sometimes the absence of proof makes things scarier. It's the waiting, the not knowing, the certainty that something is just out of sight. Looking back, I can't say for sure that the building was haunted. Maybe there were electrical issues, maybe the old structure shifted in weird ways at night. Maybe I just imagined more than I should have. But even now, I don't believe I was entirely alone in that building. Whatever it was, it wanted me to know it was there. And I'll never forget the way the silence always seemed to break right around 3:15 a.m., like it was keeping its own schedule. Story 9. Some houses feel like empty shells, but others feel like they're holding their breath, waiting for someone to step inside. That's how it felt the moment I stood in front of the old woman's apartment door on a wellness check. She lived alone in a rough neighborhood, and someone from a local care program had reported that she hadn't answered her phone in days. No family, no friends, no one who'd check in except the aide who called us. It was supposed to be routine. Maybe she'd fallen asleep. Maybe her phone was dead. Still, standing there in the dim hallway of that decaying building, I couldn't shake the sense that something was already wrong. The air smelled faintly metallic even before we opened the door, and I caught myself wondering if I was just imagining it. We knocked and called out, but the silence on the other side never broke. I got the property manager on the phone, and when he finally arrived with the spare key, his hands shook as he fitted into the lock. The door opened, and what we saw inside has stayed with me ever since. The woman was dead on the floor, her face frozen in a look that spoke louder than any words. It wasn't peaceful. It was twisted in pain and terror, eyes wide as though she'd begged for help that never came. Blood had pooled and smeared across the faded carpet, and what made my stomach lurch was the sight of her foot, detached, lying a short distance from her body. For a moment, my instincts screamed murder. The scene looked too violent, too raw to be an accident. We swept the apartment, adrenaline rushing, expecting to find someone hiding in the shadows. But the rooms were empty, nothing disturbed except for the trail of smeared blood where she had dragged herself. Slowly it came together. She had pulled a chair from the kitchen to reach her blinds, lost her balance, and when she fell, the injury was catastrophic. The bone must have snapped clean, tearing through flesh in a way that made her bleed out fast. She must have tried to crawl for help, inching across the floor until she collapsed for the last time. That's the clinical explanation, and it makes sense. But some details didn't sit right with me. The blinds she had been reaching for weren't closed. They were half open, bent at an odd angle, as if she hadn't been the one to leave them that way. On the wall near her, deep scratches cut into the paint, three parallel lines just above where her bloody handprint smeared. Maybe she clawed at the wall in agony, but the markings looked too even, too deliberate, like something had raked the surface clean. As we waited for the coroner, I kept hearing faint sounds from the back of the apartment. At first, I thought it was just the old pipes knocking, but it grew into what I swear sounded like faint footsteps moving from one room to another. I went to check again, flashlight in hand, but there was nothing. Still, the feeling of being watched never left me. The property manager refused to come inside after his first glance at the body. He stayed in the hallway, muttering that the woman had told him more than once that shadows moved in her apartment at night, especially near the windows. He dismissed it as her being old and paranoid, but standing there in the oppressive silence, I wondered if she had known something we didn't. When we finally wheeled her out, the air in the apartment seemed to shift. The smell of blood hung thick, but underneath it was something else, an almost sour, rotting odor that hadn't been there before. I kept glancing at the blinds, bent and crooked, as though someone was peering out from behind them, even then. I've worked scenes that were far worse in terms of gore and violence, but that one stays with me for a different reason. It wasn't just the tragedy of her dying alone in that way. It was the unsettling feeling that she hadn't been alone when it happened. Maybe it was all a coincidence, just the way a horrific accident looked once you pieced it together. But every time I think back, I can't shake the idea that something else was in that room with her, and that whatever it was, she saw it in her final moments. Story 10. Entering certain homes can feel like walking into a freezer. You can feel the chill before you even enter. That was the sensation we had on the night we were sent to a domestic disturbance, that appeared ordinary on the surface, but ended up being one of the oddest cases I've ever encountered. It was a quiet evening, nothing out of the ordinary, when the radio sent us to check on a house in a quiet neighborhood. The report didn't give much detail, just a vague note about yelling and possible violence. Pulling up outside, the place looked perfectly normal. Lights on, yard tidy, no signs of chaos. If anything, it seemed too calm, like the kind of silence that makes you uneasy because you know something isn't right behind the walls. We knocked, and after a moment, the door opened to reveal an elderly couple sitting quietly in their living room. The scene looked harmless at first. They weren't fighting, no overturned furniture, no raised voices. Just two people who could have been anyone's grandparents sitting side by side on a couch. That should have been reassuring, but instead it made the hair on my arms prickle. The woman wasted no time explaining why we were there. Her words came quickly, like she had been rehearsing them or waiting desperately for someone to believe her. She claimed that her husband had been walking through the walls at night, disappearing for hours, and then reappearing with young women who he would bring into the kitchen. She insisted he was committing indecent acts right there on the floor while she sat helpless in the next room. The way she described it, she didn't sound embarrassed. She sounded terrified. Now, in law enforcement, you get used to strange claims. People hallucinate, people ramble, and sometimes medication or mental illness creates wild stories. My partner and I exchanged a glance, and I was already leaning toward writing this off as one of those cases. But then I looked at the husband. That's when the unease set in. The man didn't move. He didn't deny it, didn't try to defend himself, didn't even blink much. He just sat there, perfectly still, staring right at us with an expression that gave nothing away. His eyes didn't wander, his hands rested flat on his knees, and his mouth stayed firmly shut. It was as if the accusations didn't matter, like he was used to hearing them.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Just part. He didn't look embarrassed, angry, or confused. He just watched. As the woman continued talking, I noticed little things in the room that didn't sit right. The wallpaper was peeling in places, and in one corner the pattern almost seemed warped, as if the wall itself had shifted slightly. The carpet near the kitchen door looked unusually worn, like dozens of feet had been pacing back and forth on that exact spot. I couldn't shake the idea that something had been moving through that area more often than made sense for two elderly people living alone. We asked the woman if she had seen these women leave the house afterward. She shook her head and insisted they never used the front or back door. She said they simply disappeared the same way her husband did, through the walls. My partner jotted it down, trying not to roll his eyes, but I was watching the husband closely. For just a split second, I thought I saw his lips twitch upward. Not into a full smile, but into something like a smirk. It was so brief, I almost convinced myself I imagined it. Still, the weight in the room grew heavier. The air felt stale, and I swear it got colder as we stood there. At one point, I thought I heard a faint shuffling sound coming from the kitchen, like bare feet moving across tile. But when I glanced over, the room was empty. I didn't mention it to my partner, but I noticed the woman's head turn sharply in that direction at the same moment, as if she had heard it too. We eventually wrapped up, telling the woman we'd make a note of her concerns and advising her to follow up with her doctor. It was all we could realistically do, but walking back toward the door, I couldn't help glancing back at the husband. He hadn't moved an inch. He sat like a statue, still staring directly at us, as if he knew we hadn't believed a word his wife said. As we stepped outside, my partner muttered that it was just another case of an elderly woman losing touch with reality. Maybe he was right. That was the logical answer. But I couldn't shake the feeling that the husband had wanted us there, like he enjoyed hearing his wife expose these bizarre secrets while he sat silently, daring us to react. For weeks after, I found myself thinking about that call. I tried to picture what would happen in that house when the lights went out and the neighborhood was asleep. The woman's desperate insistence that he was walking through walls, the warped wallpaper, the worn carpet, the shuffle of invisible footsteps. It all came back to me whenever I closed my eyes. And the husband's expression, frozen and unblinking, was the part that haunted me most. I've handled plenty of unsettling calls, but that house still sticks with me. Because here's the thing, if the woman really was imagining it all, the husband should have at least protested, even half-heartedly. But he didn't, not once. And every time I remember that flicker of a smirk crossing his face, I wonder if maybe she wasn't imagining everything after all.